if you listen to the giant pop music hits, they tend to have something in common. Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. Give up what that secret is? Steven Jackson has our answer.
If we're going to talk about American pop music, there's only one place to start.
The Billboard Hot 100 is the most authoritative pop singles chart in the United States.
Keith Caulfield is an associate director at Billboard. They produce a lot of music charts, and the Hot 100 is the big one.
We have a very fancy formula, very scientific mathematical formula,
where they plug in music purchases, airplay, and online streaming.
And out comes a bunch of points, and then we rank them.
They've been at it since 1958. But if you ask Keith what makes a song climb to number one, he'll tell you what you already know. It takes a solid beat, a catchy hook, being Taylor Swift, and still...
You can check off all of those checkboxes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that song is going to become a hit. Because otherwise, everyone would have a hit single, and we'd all be incredibly wealthy. And it doesn't work that way.
There's no formula for the perfect hit. But if you're of a statistical cast of mind, like Professor Joe Nunez, you're still got to wonder.
What are the really big hits, those number one songs, and what distinguishes them from songs that sort of made it to a broad audience but didn't quite get that power of number one?
Joe is a marketing professor at the University of Southern California. He's also a musician.
I play guitar and do so pretty poorly.
A few years ago, Joe started studying pop. Actually, he hired a team of grad students. They listened to all the number one hits on the Hot 100 and to the bottom dwellers, tracks that never made it above number 90 on the chart. Joe and his team coded every song by its unique combination of sounds. It's pop recipe.
The sound of a guitar, the sound of drums, the sound of a bass.
And the factor that separates number ones from the pack, more than anything else?
Background vocals.
Good 60% of all the Billboard number one hits had backup singers. Now, 60% doesn't sound huge, but bear with me on the numbers. Drums show up in 95% of top songs. No surprise there, but they were just as likely to be in the bottom-ranked songs, so they're not relevant. One sound that was more likely to reach number one was the synthesizer, but that popularity mostly came in a surge during the 70s and 80s when synth-pop dominated the charts. So, across the whole dataset, over half a century of pop, the best predictor of a number one hit is backup singers.
Is this ranked in any particular order?
But this I brought this Keith Caulfield at Billboard a copy of Joe Nunez's research article because Keith doesn't subscribe to the Journal of the European Society for the Cognitive Sciences of Music. And Keith was skeptical at first.
Oh, this is background vocals with a clean guitar and a synthesizer. Man, they're very specific, aren't they?
But it's hard to argue with the data.
Britney Spears' Baby One More Time. You hear like three or four people singing Baby One More Time behind her. So that makes sense.
By the end of our meeting, Keith came around.
People appreciate the idea of background vocals. They like harmonies. They like groups of voices that sound good together. It makes them feel good, and there's something that goes off in their brain that says, I like this song. You know, you probably feel more comfortable with a group of vocalists, and you sound better in the car when you sing along with them.
Dr. Elizabeth Margulis calls this imaginative participation. Margulis directs the Music Cognition Lab at the University of Arkansas, and she says you can see this imaginative participation in the brain.
When you're lying there in an fMRI scanner listening, you see all this activity in motor planning region. So there's this very kind of literal sense in which some kind of participatory mechanisms are at play.
After all, passively listening to music is a relatively recent thing.
You know, if you look at the way music's used historically and across cultures, you'll find its use in ritual and everybody's joining in and playing and dancing and hanging out together.
And while lead vocalists can be hard to imitate, backup singers give you a way in.
People talk about a sense of merging with the music, a sense that the boundaries between themselves and the sound have dissolved and that they've become one with it in some way.
The desire to sing along is like an instinct. Everybody does it, except Keith Caulfield. His career in pop has ruined him. He knows too much.
I'd like to think that I could carry a tune, but no. I mean, I could probably play a mean cowbell. Like, I'm really probably great on tambourine. I could probably play a bongo drum.
For Studio 360, I'm Stephen Jackson.